Well, hi there. Thanks so much for your time. I'm Dan Edwards, and welcome into my podcast, A Greater Dayton, where I highlight our unsung hometown heroes who inspire, entertain, and inform. This episode, I feature another remarkable person who is making it a Greater Dayton. Now, although she is officially a transplant from Bakersfield, California, she is now impacting the future of healthcare in our region as the first female president of a major hospital in the Dayton, Ohio region. Just ahead, a chat with Charlotte Briggs as A Greater Dayton continues. A Greater Dayton is powered by our friends at the Dayton Business Journal, a wonderful resource for economic insight that you'll get nowhere else, and brought to you by Pivotal Media, LLC, integrated marketing, public relations, commercial, and podcast production services. Pivotal Media, LLC, moving your marketing in new directions. And stay tuned for information concerning Pivotal Media's exclusive workforce development campaign called Be the Essential. If you are struggling to attract, hire, train, retrain, and retain quality workers, then stay tuned. We have just what the doctor ordered to help your business thrive while creating exciting career paths for anyone seeking a fulfilling career. All right, welcome into Greater Dayton, episode 91. And as mentioned, my podcast features our unsung hometown heroes who inspire, entertain, and inform. And our guest today is definitely inspiring a new generation. As an author, she's informing with her books. And I'm sure if her daughter is any indication, she has to be entertaining. It's a pleasure to have Charlotte Briggs join us now, first female president of Kettering Health's main campus on Southern Boulevard in Kettering, Ohio, their flagship hospital. Charlotte, welcome to A Greater Dayton.
Thank you. We're having a good time here, and we're happy to be here.
A big smile on your face. The sun is shining out your beautiful windows of your office here, which have the Kettering Health Network, the Troy Hospital of Photograph, also Sycamore Hospital, as well as the main campus here. So how does it feel to have so many people under your purview?
I think it takes great people, right? So when you have great people, it's actually, I would say it's fun because you have all different minds coming together. Everybody looks at things differently. So our conversations are robust. We get to look at things differently. Yeah. And so it's exciting.
So what you're saying is a lot of meetings during the course of the day.
Yeah, it's a lot of meetings during the course of the day.
You know, I mentioned your daughter, Jill, in the opening, and she's so entertaining. And a shout out to Jill Waters while we're at here, a fellow member of the Rotary Club of Oakwood. And as Sergeant of Arms, she has been very entertaining in her role. Chip off the old block?
Oh, well, I think she's her own block, actually. But she has been like this since she came out to shoot. So she has been a character. I always just say my job was to keep ahead of her when she was growing up. She's a delightful young lady.
And you are a grandma of the grandkids. I know Pepper and Lemon. I've actually met those two. But you have others.
I have two more. Yeah. They're older. They're Stella and Amy. And Stella and Amy is a product of my son, Dustin. So Dustin and Hiromi, they're lovely children who just actually came here from South Korea. So exciting time. They lived there for 14 years. And so this was our first Thanksgiving together, our first Christmas together, and all those periods of time. So
Jill followed you here from Bakersfield, and your son, as you mentioned, moved to Dayton, relocating from South Korea, was it? You must be really close to that, or you just can't shake them.
Oh, they're mama's but kids. So that's good. I always just say Jill follows us everywhere. And we're very blessed that she does. And now that we have all the kids together, we're just excited.
Your name is spelled Sharlet. A unique spelling, beautiful name. Family history?
My mom, we're all boarding school kids. And my mom were roomed with somebody whose name was Charlotte, spelt the way she spelt mine. Oh. And her mom didn't want her called Lottie. And so they made the name up. Sharlet, and I got it also.
With kind of your journey, where did you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Eureka, California, which it's raining and having earthquakes right now, but I grew up in Eureka, California, then went to school in Hillsburg, wine country. Mm. From there, went to Union College, spent some time in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then went back and spent some time in the Napa Valley, kind of getting my feet wet on the working situation.
Married.
Married.
Your husband?
Yes, I have a husband. He's retired.
Good for him. Now, what was his work?
So he was in CIO, so he was in healthcare also, Chief Information Officer.
How did you guys meet?
In meetings. We're a product of meetings, so yeah, we met in meetings.
And you join us from Bakersfield, which is three times the size of Dayton. And the weather has to be incredible. So the question, why did you move to Dayton, Ohio?
Oh, we love Dayton. I think we love the people in Bakersfield, too.
Oh, sure.
I had two hospitals in Bakersfield, and the opportunity came to come to Dayton. I will say Bakersfield's a great place. It's dry. Yeah. It's brown. Dayton's green. We have rain. We have snow. It's exciting. We just sit sometimes and look out our window and in awe of the weather that we have here. Not so much in awe of the tornadoes. Mm. But then we had earthquakes there, so.
You've already mentioned that you were in Lincoln, Nebraska. You're also in Utah for a while, correct?
We were in Idaho, in Pocatello, Idaho.
Gotcha.
And there I worked at a community hospital that was a county hospital. So that means you just don't have any money to do anything. That's really what that is. It's all about patient care.
Which was good training for what you're dealing with today, right?
That's exactly right. Especially the cost inflation is, you know, from a hospital. It's hitting us as a community, right? And now you have as a hospital supply costs, employee costs, you know, workforce shortages. It's all fun, right?
I don't know how you do it. All right, well, what's the early impressions of the city and its people?
So, you know, we came we were asked to come out here and, look at Dayton. And we were just in awe of it when we came, not only just for all the things that Dayton brings, and it's a seat of innovation. I mean, how can you not want to be at the seat of innovation? I mean, it's almost like every week we're learning something else that we innovated here in Dayton. Mm. So exciting time for us. And then, so we decided to come, and our son came to visit us, and he just spent one week in here, and he said, Mom, I'm going to move to Dayton. I love Dayton. And I think, once again, it's the people, and it's what we have to offer. It's a great place to raise children. And it is inclusive. The amount of people that I've met here already through relationships that people want me to meet different people, and the relationships that people are willing to introduce everybody to be part of is, I think it's par none. Mm. And so it's an exciting place for us.
You know, my opening, I mentioned you were the first female president of this flagship hospital in Kettering Health. What does that designation mean to you? I don't mean to insult you by saying that, but that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that. You know, and I just said when they asked me to be president, they said, you know, I was the first female president. I says, you know, it doesn't matter if you're male or female, you have to do the same thing in a hospital. Right. The reality of it is, I say I'm the second female because I think Virginia Kettering was the first female, right? So I give, she was really the breath behind this hospital. I feel like I get to walk in her footsteps and continue the vision that she and Eugene had for putting this together for Charles Kettering.
Well, you were originally hired on as a COO. I guess looking at your resume, like, turnarounds are kind of your specialty, aren't they?
Yeah, all my life I've been able to go into an organization and take a department and then be given more departments to turn around. And so I've been blessed being able to do either consulting in different areas, some coaching, as we really look at how to turn around a facility. And my last facility was 30 days from closing, and we got them turned around to where there was no problem. So I feel it's an honor to be able to do that, mm-hmm. but it takes, once again, it takes an incredible team. And the team really is physicians, your staff, everybody comes together to make it happen.
But that's a lot of personalities you have to turn around too. I mean, what's harder? I mean, the facilities turn around or the management of people turn around?
Yeah, I think the key there is just bring everybody into the conversation, mm-hmm. right? When people know what the issues are, they're willing to step in and help. I think the worst thing we can do is to try to do something in a secret, because it doesn't work that way, right? It's really bringing people together. And so whether it's the facility you're turning around, it's all about people anyway.
And then 6 months later, you became the CEO, the first female president of the main campus. How did you make that move so quickly?
Well, I made that move because the CEO at the time got moved up to the network. So as being COO, and I love the operations of the hospital. I think that's kind of a fun thing to do. So I was thrilled coming from a CEO back to a COO of a larger organization. knowing that at some time they were going to make me CEO. So I knew that at that time. But then it was actually a little quicker because the guy got pulled up into the network, and then I was an automatic seat to move into the CEO position.
And as I mentioned, in addition to the main campus, you also oversee the day-to-day operations of the hospitals in Hamilton, Troy, and Miamisburg. So it's not just the Kettering main campus you have to deal with.
And I have, once again, those great people, those great presidents at each of those hospitals. But yes, the thing is how do you move everybody together? Mm-hmm. It's all about safe patient care. That's why we're here, right? Safe patient care. So how do we do that in an economical way? How do we do that for patient experience to be the best patient experience? Each hospital has its own culture, which is really the fun part about it. There isn't one size fits all. Troy's different than Hamilton, different than Miamisburg, different from the main campus. It's really, I would say, the oversight of it is kind of a fun thing to help make sure you're developing your leaders to be all that they can be.
It seems like we have a hospital or urgent care on every corner now. Is that kind of the business model, and is it sustainable in our current environment?
Yeah, I think what you have to look at is how do you bring care to the people versus making the people travel for care? And I think that's where Kettering's really strength has been, looking at the community, saying, how can I bring the care to the people? Is it sustainable? I think time will tell us that.
What is the health of Kettering Health?
What is the health of Kettering Health? You mean financially?
How are we doing?
Well, we have a good balance sheet, if that's what you're asking. I will just say it's hard. It is hard. I'm sure every organization, every healthcare organization is finding it hard. Workforce is hard. We're paying more for workforce than we were paying before. The supply cost, as everybody else's supply cost is going, whether it's groceries or just regular, the Band-Aid, medication, all those supply costs are going up. And so not necessarily our payments going up, you know, so our reimbursement isn't going up, but our supply cost is going up. So it really just takes a different leadership than the leadership of the past, where I remember back in the 80s, that's how old I am looking at this stuff, and we used to go golfing on Wednesday afternoon because all the doctors did. Well, we're not seeing that anymore. Yeah. Everybody's churning hard, making sure that we're getting the patients in, getting the great care that they're giving, and then getting them back home.
But why I admire you so much, Charlotte, and any healthcare provider at this point who is keeping the lights on, so to speak, is that you make these plans, you know, 10 and 15 years in advance. You don't know there's a pandemic coming. You don't know that you're going to be paying these astronomical healthcare costs for your employees. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think the nice thing about, well, if you can say there's a nice thing about the pandemic, right?
Exactly,
I mean, the pandemic is a horrible thing that happened.
Right.
We did get some help from the government on that, too. Government did step in some financial help on CARES dollars and FEMA dollars. And so I think that I don't know if there's any organization that could withstand everything. Because you think about it, we shut down surgeries. So we shut down our revenue. At the same time, our costs are escalating. And so there was some help that we got in there. And then it really is making sure that you're watching everything and really becoming efficient, taking the waste out of the organization and continuing that path constantly.
Again, if there is a silver lining to a pandemic, you're ready for the next one. Perish the thought that ever happens, correct?
Yeah, perish the thought. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of things we learned.
Yeah.
And that if you have these things and you're not looking back on lessons learned, then you've missed the boat on that. You know, and I think our lessons learned have been many. And as we've just really looked at, there's maybe some things that we stopped, we shouldn't have stopped. There were some things that we put on hold, we shouldn't have put on hold. There's some things that we move forward with that were good things to move forward with. So there's all those elements. But I think, once again, it really comes into, there's nothing like a pandemic to show your team pulling together.
Yeah. You mentioned to me that in the last several years, leadership in the healthcare industry has had to adapt and change in three separate ways. Can you explain that leadership philosophy?
Yeah, I think before the pandemic, there was as we led organizations, we were really looking through the normal day-to-day things. Now that pandemic hit, completely different things. We're shutting down things. Where prices, like we talked about, are escalating, which really just takes a different leadership. And then you also have your employees, and your employees have gone through that time frame. Your employees have gone through the beginning of pandemic, heroes, to, as a pandemic continues, to being vilified in with people, because people don't believe in COVID. They don't believe in the vaccines. And so we're finding them taking it out on our workforce, and as patients are coming into the hospital, families taking it out on them. And so it really takes a different, how do you help your staff be resilient? And then after the pandemic, well, not even after the pandemic, we're still in the pandemic, right? It's just not as we're not seeing the volumes that we're seeing, but we still have patients. patients in. Mm-hmm. And it really has taken those new nursing students, right? They're students who went through nursing school during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's all they see, right? So all they know is COVID. And so how do you take them through that next thing? This is really what nursing is. Or how do you take that nurse that's been doing nursing for 31 years, who zipped more body bags than she's ever zipped in her life in the last 2 years? And how do you help them with resilience as you're working through? And it's not just the nursing staff, it's the physicians. Everybody's weary. So how do you work through that?
Yeah. Well, what struggles are you facing today besides the workforce shortage? There's no loyalty anymore, seems like.
Yeah, I think it's really looking at that generation that's coming up and saying, so how do we meet that need of the generation? I mean, my mom's generation was a generation that you got a job and you stuck with it.
Right.
The generation that we see now is a generation that may stay with you 3 years. They'll jump for money. The loyalty isn't always there. So I think what you end up having to do is really rely on your mission. The mission is what drives this younger generation, which is beautiful. It's a beautiful group of people, right? And they really want to know that what they do matters. And that's where I think your mission really comes into place and having them really see that and give them the opportunities for that.
You mentioned mission-driven. Do you think that gives Kettering Health a decided edge attracting quality employees over your competitors?
It's interesting. I have the opportunity of meeting with employees at their orientation. And so I always start the orientation with wanting to know who they are, what department, and what brought them here. Overwhelmingly, it is your faith-based organization, or I get to pray with the patients, right? Those are heartwarming things. I think in the whole time I've been doing it, one nurse said, I came because of the salary. And in my mind, I said, you won't be here long, right? That's not what you go into for.
Right, right.
But I would say 90% of the people are either my family worked here and they loved it here. It's a faith-based, I get to pray. It's different, and I want to be here.
And you want to enhance that, too.
Oh, I just keep saying, that's your responsibility. I mean, we have a mission statement. We have core values, and their responsibilities to live into those, which really drives the whole patient care.
Yeah. In your opinion, Charlotte, why are businesses in and outside of the healthcare industry failing to connect to that younger professional?
I'd love to ask them that question. I would love to ask that question. I think, you know, for me, I'm just trying to struggle with what's the best way to communicate to that group of people, because everybody's on their cell phones, right? So it's text and everything. But you always can't do that because they have data plans, right? So it's really how do you communicate with that people? How do you have a relationship with that people? So for us, it's really how do we play together? How do we laugh together? How do we just have fun together as we do the serious work of healthcare?
How important is it for you to inspire your workers?
Well, I think what's extremely important, I think that I get opportunities multiple times to talk to them. We have leadership meetings. I was just asked to speak to the nursing group, a group of people who are really working on a project. And there's up to 300 people that come to that. And so I was asked to speak of that and really thinking about, so what am I going to say? So I'm really taking Dr. Seuss' book, All the Places We Will Go, and taking each page and kind of talking about, so how does that fit into what they're doing in nursing care, right? So you're just really kind of looking at ways to keep people engaged and you want to say inspire them as they continue on their journey.
What's more important, to inspire or to motivate?
I think to inspire. And the reason why, I think if you can inspire people, it motivates them. I feel inspired, I'm going to be motivated. Mm. I don't know how you motivate somebody if they're not inspired. I think that we spend a lot of time trying to force something without really the why, and the why is the inspiration.
Right. So what motivates you?
I just love people. I love meeting people. I love the ability to take like this hospital here and the other hospitals and just make a difference in people's lives. And so I have 14 executives that report to me. For me, this last year, they each got a coach, and just being able to watch them develop over the year, our meetings are different from when we started to now. That to me inspires me. That motivates me. That makes me know that I've been given somebody the biggest gift I can give them is to help them as an individual play a different game, because they can do that here or they can do it someplace else.
I remember watching a press conference with former Bengals coach Marvin Lewis, and the reporter asked Coach Lewis how he motivated his players, and he said, easy. you hire motivated people.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I completely agree. You know, I think the issue that we have today is as the workforce, we're so short in the workforce that it feels that sometimes you just need the body, but if you just have the body, you don't have the right person, right? So that's why, for me, orientation is so important, for me to be able to hear what somebody's saying is why they want to work here. Because that person, that young man that said he came for the money, I can guarantee you, he's not motivated to be even patient care, right? He's just motivated by the money. So that wouldn't be somebody who's a great fit for us.
All right, speaking of the Bengals, what impact are you seeing on the, being the official healthcare provider of the Cincinnati Bengals, the Kettering Health Network?
Yeah, you know, it's been such a great partner. They are great partners for us. You know, besides the fact that Bengals are such a huge fan favorite, we had the opportunity, well, we actually got a call from the Bengals. I would say from the old guard of Bengals saying, we want to do something for cancer. And they actually came with a bus out here and helped us wrap some stuff for cancer patients. And they came in and visited our cancer patient. Some of them left me their phone number saying, hey, if you ever need me, just give me a call. So that's great. I think the other piece is that we had a patient here in our ICU, and he was a young father and had young kids. And his significant other says, you know, he's really a Bengals fan. Is there something we can do? Mm. And so we reached out to the Bengals and said, you know, is there something you can do? They sent a beautiful card for what, the two boys, each boy got a card, as well as the father that was in the hospital, wishing them well. Mm-hmm. When we presented that to the family, they just cried. Mm-hmm. They could not believe the heart that went behind it. Not only did they cry, but our employees were crying about the fact that the Bengals, you know, were so thoughtful to reach out to this family. When asked, they didn't have to do that. That's just who they are, right? You think about it, that's who they are, and this is who we are. What a great partnership.
All right, how do you combat the traveling nurse and their enhanced salaries? Because that's got to be a huge obstacle in the way of trying to keep these beds full. I mean, you know, it's your job.
Yeah, so, you know, luckily for now, the prices are going down. But we were paying almost three times the price of what we would, or three or four times what the price of what we would normally pay. At the height of it. And we would see people leaving to go be a traveler. And in a way, you couldn't blame them. I mean, you think about, I'm young, I got to pay my car off, I'm going to pay my house off, all those types of things. Mm. We're starting to see them come back now.
Really?
And we're seeing the prices of travelers going down. So
why? Why are they coming back?
Well, you think about, so the pandemic isn't as much as it was before. Probably. So that's going down, right? And now there's not the need for so many travelers. So now people are looking for their home again. And we've said, if you want to come home, come home, right? Come home to us. Just because you left doesn't mean you can't come home. And so that's, we great. Welcome. I mean, a good nurse is a good nurse, right?
Darn straight.
Can't blame somebody for going, leaving to get maybe their house paid off faster or
college
tuition or those types of things.
Yeah. So. I also appreciate the way that you try to engage your employees, each and every employee you have here. An example, you sent out over 2,000 thank you notes to your employees. Besides carpal tunnel syndrome in your writing hand, what were the results of that generous act of corporate kindness, if you will?
I would say, I think there's always sweet stories that you hear that. And, you know, there was this was actually my previous job. There was a person in our nutritional care who had never got a thank you card before. She put a frame around it and put it on her wall. It didn't matter. I mean, I did it with physicians too. And I had a physician that came up to me and said, I never had anybody thank me for the work that I'm doing. And I just think that sometimes we miss those opportunities. So how I did it was I would reach out to the directors and say, tell me something special about that person, right? And so I would give the director credit. I would say, hey, your director said this, just want to thank you for it, right?
Nice.
So it was very individual. It wasn't just a blank one, mm-hmm. Or, you know, one that was just, the script was the same, but I would thank them for what they did and also thank them for choosing to work.
How long did that take you to do that?
It was a year. I would have to do, you know, sometimes I would do 10 a day. I couldn't do more than 10 a day, right?
Right.
But it took me the whole year to do that.
I'm just fascinated by your leadership style. And back to your original point, you're meeting people where they are.
Yeah, that's the fun part, isn't it?
You know, in our company, we're doing this workforce development campaign called Be the Essential. And, you know, we always get the question, where are all the workers and what motivates these young adults? We have found it's in four buckets. It's they want purpose, they want culture, they want flexibility, you know, that work-life balance, and I think it's called life-work balance, and also bank. They want to make some money. Are you seeing the same thing?
Same things. Yeah. I think, you know, we're still talking that generation, and I'm not going to say that it's unhealthy. I think it they want is healthy,
absolutely,
right? And I think it's up to us to try to figure that out. It's difficult, though, right? I mean, our structures aren't set up that way. Right. So I think it really behooves us to start as we're looking at that differently.
I had a friend once say to me, people don't quit jobs, they quit their bosses. Do you agree with that statement?
I completely agree with that. Well, we see the largest turnover in our hospitals. You can get to a department and you're looking at their employee satisfaction scores. You're looking at all those pieces and you start seeing that turnover and gives you the opportunity to go back and do some more education, leadership development with that that leader, helping them be better than or show up different than what they're showing up.
Employee satisfaction turns into customer satisfaction.
It does. You know, I get the sweetest letters from people talking about our staff. They take the time to write down the person's name or the doctor's name and send, you know, letters or cards in to me about the employees. And the ability to share those back with the employees or make those employees of our month. I mean, I think the most wonderful story is that we have a young lady, Erica, and we had a young man who died, and he was a vet. Erica wanted to have a flag put over him. So she called her husband and said, you need to get a flag. And so he did. And the chaplain told me what happened. And so I went out and got five flags to the next person, right? But that's employee-led. That was an employee who had a great thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just keep thinking, how do we capture more of that, right? Because that's really what it's about for the employee, that they're really a voice that is listened to, and we just need to do more of that.
I mean, I'm reminded of the late Maya Angelou, who once said, you know, people won't remember what you did or what you said, but they remember how you made them feel.
And I think we as a community have the ability to do that also. You know, it isn't just bringing in donuts or,
right,
but, you know, our staff love seeing patients who've left, right? And they come back and they're healthy and they're showing their families and everything like that. And they get to say, you know, the people get to say thank you. When somebody calls me and says, hey, I really want to do something for your employees, I say, hey, just come. We'll find out which employees took care of you. Mm. Come to our boardroom, say thank you to them. And I tell you, once again, there's nothing like a simple thank you to staff for what they've done that really motivates them.
She's almost tearing up here as she's talking here, ladies and gentlemen. We're on the first floor in her office, and it seems to be a breezeway for the doctors or residents going to and fro. What would you like to say to those doctors who are just beginning their career?
There's a doctor's lounge that's right across from me, right next door to me, and I get to mingle with them for lunch and stuff. I would say my heart sings when I get to come in the morning or in the afternoon. I walk through and I see the new physicians with their proctors or their mentors, and they're talking about cases that they see, and they're asking questions and stuff like that. And I look at these, and they look like they're 12 years old. I look at these young people and I say, you are our future, right? These are incredible people who look at them, they decided to do this service of taking care of people. And I just think what an incredible gift they've given us as a community to say, I want to step in and take care of our community. So for me, we have Doctors' Day coming up where we just, you know, we get to say thank you all the time. But really, it's incredible the amount of new doctors that we have coming out. We have residents, we have fellows coming out. And like I said, they look young and they look younger all the time. But they're as dedicated as Marcus Welby, if we remember those days of Marcus Welby, right? We're telling our age, right? But they're as dedicated as that, and it's an incredible group of people.
Yeah. Theodore Roosevelt once said, far and away, the best prize that life offers is the chance to work hard at work worth doing. And I can't imagine a job that is more worth doing than helping people during their most desperate times.
Yeah, you know, I say I'm so lucky. I get to help patients. I get to help physicians. I get to help our staff. And I get to help family, right? Because if through what structures we put in place, we make it easier for the nurse to do their job, easier for the physician, which delivers safe patient care, and I get a father or a mother or a brother and sister back to their family, I don't know that there's a bigger gift you can do, right? So I just feel very, very, very fortunate to be able to do what I do.
So with that said, how do we get more of our young professionals involved in this truly rewarding healthcare field?
Just, it is hard, right? As a nurse, I always say my heart goes out to our nurses and physicians. The work that they do every single day is definitely a calling. And I think as we really look at the era of where we have moved from real, you know, even look, you look, you know, 5-10 years ago, where we were more relational, and today we're more technical. How do we meet that younger generation in that technical piece? That's a piece that we have to figure out. I mean, we have technology all over the place. You know, we have tools here that other people don't have. So I have a cyclotron here that makes drugs that I can't give anybody else because the life cycle is only 20 minutes, or the half-life of life is 20 minutes. But I can do brain things that other people can't do. And that really motivates some of our younger generation. As we look at environmental care, incredibly important thing is environmental care. How do you keep your hospital clean, right? Mm-hmm. I would say one of the most beautiful things I heard this last time when I had orientation in this environment of care, and I asked her why she had worked here, and she goes, because I like to clean. It really is finding that person, right? What are you passionate about, and how can I give you that opportunity to be within that passion? It isn't always nursing, right? Sometimes it's fixing food. Sometimes it's, you know, cleaning, stuff like that. So
it seems to me that you take orientation as market research.
I do. It is, and it gives me the opportunity for them to see me, to set the stage for the
huge
culture,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, I have been involved in athletics all my life, and players don't play so much for, you know, the win. They want to win, obviously, but they play for the coach. You know, if you've got a coach that's got your back, you'll go through hell and back for that person.
Yeah, and I think that that's where having our leaders at each level in the organization is critical, right? I mean, I'm just one person, and mm-hmm, I don't interact with everybody, but they interact with their leader. And so our responsibility is, how do we make sure that leader, that coach for them, mm-hmm, is really the coach that will drive them to excellence.
It's awesome. I've sure enjoyed this, but I ask all my guests of a Greater Dayton this final question. How do we all make it a Greater Dayton?
For me, how to make it a Greater Dayton is continue the relationships, you know, putting me in touch with other people and meeting other people. So I will say I feel very blessed. I've got to meet with like mayors, city managers, all kinds of people who put me in touch with other people, right? To me, Boone Shop. I got to go see the Boone Shop because somebody put me in touch with, I was out at Springfield looking at the different things out in Springfield, and they put me in touch with Boone Shop. It's just all these different things that Dayton does so well is those connections, I think are just, and I just tell people when I want to get people to come here, I just tell them, you're going to make awesome connections, awesome, yeah, relationship. Rotary's great places, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I joined, for those connections, no question. Well, Charlotte Briggs, first female president of Kettering Health, the main campus, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend some time with you, and God bless you and your family and your mission. I love the branding, Kettering Health, be your best.
Be best, absolutely right.
I wanted to ask you real quick, do you have any more books in you?
I do.
Okay.
So I've written several. I do have one that I'm writing on leadership. And I've been saying for the last year, I'm about 80% done.
Oh, good.
But something will come up and I think, oh, I need to put that in. And
right,
I need to put that
right
in, right? So I have one coming out on leadership. And it's really for people who report to me is kind of where I'm looking at it. Is that how do you set the stage for what you want your people to know? So that's really kind of what, yeah, that book is about. It's about emotional intelligence. It's about some male-female differences. How do they understand people so they can do their job better?
By the way, look for yours truly hosting monthly Kettering Health Live chats on Facebook page and answering your healthcare questions with Kettering Health experts. Like and share, and it's really good information. So thanks again, Charlotte, for making it a Greater Dayton.
Thank you. I've enjoyed my time with you.
A Greater Dayton is powered by the Dayton Business Journal. Grow your business, advance your career, and simplify your work life with a digital subscription to the Dayton Business Journal. Local news updates with unmatched business intelligence from the award-winning DBJ reporters covering the Dayton region's business beat. Start your premium digital subscription now. It really is an investment in you and your future.
And A Greater Dayton is also brought to you by Pivotal Media LLC. If you're looking for a job or you're looking to train up to your next higher paying gig, well, you need the one-stop resource that is BeTheEssential.com. Career-changing info on Pivotal Media's unprecedented workforce development campaign. Pivotal Media has partnered with several employers and nonprofits to help businesses struggling to hire and retain quality workers while aiding those eager to get into the workforce or to move up that ladder financially. We need you here in the Dayton region. Interested? Go to BeTheEssential.com. Find your future, not just a job. Pivotal Media is also a proud sponsor of Extreme STEM Competition. Leagues are now forming. Middle schoolers and high schoolers training in STEM, core science, technology, engineering, and math, who, in a very fun way, build robots, put them in the cage, and do everything they can to totally annihilate their opponent's bot. It's cage matches, man. Last one standing mentality. It is so much fun. Watch it online. You'll get hooked. That's Extreme STEM. It also has leagues in drone soccer. It is so cool, so much fun, and so educational. Pivotal Media is looking for partners to sponsor a team. If you'd like to impact the youth of tomorrow, leading to a fulfilling career, maybe your future employee, well, just go to extremestem.org for more information. That's the letters extremestem.org, extremestem.org. Well, this has been a Pivotal Media production. Pivotal Media, integrated marketing, public relations, and commercial and podcast production services. PivotalMediaLLC.com, moving your marketing in new directions. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. I'm Dan Edwards. As always, thank you so much for your interest in our podcast and your interest in the Dayton region. For connectivity to this episode's guest, just check the episode show notes. I urge you to tell other like-minded people about A Greater Dayton podcast, like and share. And if you get a chance, if you could write a favorable review for me, that would be awesome. And by the way, you can binge listen to all 91 episodes of A Greater Dayton on Spotify. But now, my friends, it is time for you to go out and make it A Greater Dayton.